Hi, this is Jeremy Raddick. I was Gareth in the Doctor Who TV movie, and you're listening to Gallifrey Public Radio.
This is Gallifrey Public Radio, a weekly podcast dedicated to positive enjoyment of Doctor Who. We travel through classic and new episodes, explore the extended universe, and play a few games from time to time. We do discuss news, content that has been officially released, and the occasional interesting rumor, but we'll warn you before anything considered spoilers comes up.
Welcome to episode 418 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where Give has Take, Invasion has Abduction, and the Torchwood team has issues. I'm Julie.
I'm Kier.
I'm Haley.
And I'm Jay. This week in Adrift, the second season of Torchwood is coming to a close, but not before shaking Gwen's faith and understanding of her team in a way that we may not have seen since the first season.
Doesn't this feel a bit like early getting to know these people? Sort of a response from Gwen.
But much better writing than we got in season one.
It's true. It's true. It's like the season one we should have had. Well, I don't know. I don't know if I go that far. It's a season one we didn't get. How about that?
Yeah. But it does kind of bring you full circle on all of their relationships. From where they started, that she had to be sort of brought in, and now it's kind of she feels a little bit on the outside. Like, everyone else has stuff to do, and what am I doing here?
Right, which is a nice juxtaposition against what goes on when she clocks off, whenever she does clock off. So, all right, yeah, we'll get into all of that. Right off the cuff, so Julie, would you say at a top line, taking in the episode as a whole, that this was one that held your interest, kept you entertained, maybe not necessarily a happy, definitely not a happy episode, but one that you felt was a solid Torchwood installment?
Definitely solid Torchwood installment. I don't remember it, but again, as most of what we've seen, I haven't remembered a lot of them, these recent ones. But it was still a solid episode, and I appreciate it for everything that it explored and where it went.
Okay. I would agree with that. I think this is one where, as we just sort of briefly mentioned, this just goes to show that as well as we think we know the characters and the team and some of their backstory and things, there are secrets buried within secrets buried within secrets. And it's almost expected from a viewer's perspective to know another layer of mystery to at least one of our primary characters in almost every episode, or else we feel a little bit cheated. Mm-hmm. Usually Jack. But there are times when we get it from others. This is heavy into question mark Jack Harkness question mark on this one. Haley, what was your walk away from this? Positive, negative, indifferent?
So this is actually, I think, the last episode of Torchwood that I actually remember all the way. There's like two more scenes in season two that I remember. But this is the last whole episode that I remember. And it's because it's very good. And I feel like it's very like, it's like a very Torchwood episode. You know, if you want somebody to have an idea of what Torchwood is, this is a good example.
Really ticks all the boxes. Yeah. Jay, where do you come in on that one?
So this is the only one that I can really say I really remembered this one, but it wasn't until you saw him walking along the bridge or whatever when it all kind of clicked into place, and like I was like, oh yes, I remember this one, and there's this, and I start like replaying the episode in my head, and then like by the time he gets taken, I was like, oh no. Oh, I remember what's coming. This is not good.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I was thrilled that we were getting this one.
Good. All right. Well, let's probe this one a little deeper and find out exactly what makes it such a winner for all of our estimations.
The people we've identified here are definitely victims of the rift.
What do we think happens to them?
Scattered through time and space, I guess.
Cheery thought. Thank you.
This is good work. But I don't know what you want us to do.
We find a way to prevent it.
Toshiko, can we predict when the spikes are going to happen?
No. And they're gone in a matter of seconds.
Then I don't know how we combat them.
Jack, we have a duty here. These people are victims of the rift. If they've been attacked by a weevil...
Weevils we can catch. If they're victims, we fix their wounds. But this, we don't know when it's going to happen. We don't know where they end up. Seriously, Gwen. Mm-hmm. Practically. Tell me what we should do.
We help those left behind.
The story leads off giving the answer to the question Julie had towards the close of our previous conversation.
Oh, which was, yes.
You know, where the hell was Andy at the wedding?
Why wasn't Andy there? Come on, Andy, that's not a good enough reason.
He's pining for the fjords.
Yeah, but she was your best mate at some point.
Tell me you didn't miss the hell out of Andy.
I did miss the hell out of Andy.
And he is such a sad sack character. But you he can't really help is. You can't help it. I mean, you kind of, every once in a while, it's good to have that reminder of the eyes from the outside,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
He is technically, as a police constable, he is a position of authority.
And he knows the most about Gwen, and he knows the most out of anyone else who could be close to them besides Reese without being part of Torchwood.
And without really knowing what it is they do.
Yeah. But I do appreciate 100% the amount of humor that they have in his perceived relationship with Reese.
Oh.
I just love
the
one-sided back and forth. Like, Reese doesn't even get to defend himself.
Yeah. And this, surprisingly, I mean, knowing Reese's character and knowing the way he's kind of this blue-collar, salt-of-the-earth kind of guy, he doesn't throw shade back at Andy. I mean, he kind of, you know, calls him, oh, that poor sod, and has a laugh about it. But it's really not, it's not mean-spirited. Andy takes digs at Reese when he's not around.
It was one of those that just very much kind of, I really admired Reese in the fact that, like, you know, Gwen tells him what's going on and he just kind of laughs it off. He's like, man, he's got no clue, does he? Like, very easily could get bent out of shape, could get upset, could get jealous, and he just laughs about it like, man, that guy's got no chance. And but Andy, like, every chance he gets, he's got to, like, try and undermine him somehow. Even though the fight has already well and truly been lost, he can't resist it.
Yeah. It speaks a lot to Reese as an individual, though, because if Reese were any more like Andy, Gwen would not be able to do this job and still be with him.
Mm-hmm.
Because, true. So even Andy as an individual, not in a relationship other than as friends with Gwen, can't even leave that alone and can't leave her relationship with Reese alone. So they were never going to be, because obviously there's no chemistry from Gwen on that side at all. However, it also is part and parcel. They wouldn't have made it even if there was, because Andy would get jealous of what she's doing in Torchwood. And I think because of his nature, it wouldn't have worked the way that Gwen and Reese share the knowledge of Torchwood. So I think it speaks a lot to their relationship, which I think is a fun juxtaposition in this episode as well. And that Reese, just for who he is and what he brings to the show.
Right. On his occasional appearances.
Yeah.
Let's jump then for a second to the other side of that. And that has to do with the really complicated and at times really caustic conversations between Gwen and Reese in this story. While I absolutely get that they are at either sides of wanting to have this conversation about family life and extending the family, and Gwen wanting to give it some attention, but her job is just so encompassing that she can't even find the time to have the conversation to see if she has the time to have the child. But I wanted to get everyone sort of read about how the two of them sort of arced through that conversation. And it isn't resolved. It definitely isn't resolved by the close of this. If anything, it's probably in a worse shape than it was when it started. But how did that make you feel, and how true to the characters did you feel that conversation was between the two of them, and the fact that it did get really heated at times, and you could see that there were times when they were sort of cheerful about it and say, all right, well, it's going to take us apart, and there's times when they were really at loggerheads and nearly screaming at each other, or at least one of them was screaming.
I mean, we have seen up to this point that Reese is not 100% on board with Torchwood and everything that it's doing, and doing to Gwyn in particular, because, you know, she has personally experienced some consequences because of her involvement with Torchwood, and he sees that that's going to continue. So I think this episode shows him kind of coming to a head with that and really exploding in a way that we haven't seen yet. And then her, towards the end of it, also kind of reevaluating her relationship with Torchwood and what it's going to mean for her future and what she wants.
Right. He's never given her an ultimatum that says she has to pull back from her work. He's always sort of respected a line wherein he understands how important it is to her. And he absolutely, now that he has a fuller understanding of exactly what the heck it is she does, it's not as if he's telling her, no, please don't save the world. No, don't get rid of dangerous alien forces and all these things.
I think the conversation that they had around the tree is the most truthful that Reese has ever been, as well as Gwyn. I think that Gwyn would have been happy to forever pretend like they were someday going to have the conversation and then just practice all forever and never ever get there. Yeah. And I think that Reese's anger towards that is justified. It was very abrupt, but only because we only see these very small glimpses with them. They live together all the time. So I could see it building to the point where he got very upset over this. Like, she's never even willing to talk about it. If those are her true feelings and she really does think, like, no, I'm not going to do it, I think that's part of the conversation he wants to have, just so he knows where they stand. And she's not even willing to give him that.
We also don't know how many times she's pushed off this conversation. Like, we get from the first time they mention it that it's not the first time she's pushed it off.
Right.
Well, and I get the sense that it is also kind of painful for her because, like, maybe this is something that she has dealt with herself. Like, you know, she may have wanted children and a family and all the things that go along with it. And she has had to come to terms with this on her own and hasn't quite coped with it well enough to convince him as well. So, you know, when Reese is being like, no, we absolutely need to have kids, there's that part of her that kind of wants to agree with him. And she has to, like, convince herself as well as Reese. And it's difficult.
I think the way the two of them handle that particular scene in the park says a lot about how they have internalized their characters, but it also bothers me a great deal in one particular aspect. Gwyn sort of, maybe this is the first time that she actually expresses, because it punches out of her mouth that she says, yeah, why don't we have this conversation? Because it's going to be very brief. It just works like this. It can't happen. And here's why. And she spells it out. She's been processing this for some time, but maybe she's been absolutely hesitant to express it or maybe even admit it to herself. Mm. And it just comes tumbling out. But at that point, she sort of folds. Like, you see it physically. And she just sits down and she sort of gets very small and she just sort of accepts the rest of what gets thrown at her for the rest of the scene. It's what gets thrown at her that bothers me for the rest of that scene in particular. Reese is standing over her, towering over her, pointing a finger in her face and getting super aggressive. And just the way the whole scene plays out bothers me about, and I don't know if this was Kaioen's particular decision or whether something he was guided to, but the way that whole thing looked to me was just this huge masochistic chest pounding display that I think pushed beyond what I would expect from Reese. I can expect him to yell and scream and flail his arms around, but maybe him stomping around the tree or something like that, it's much different than him browbeating her and pointing her down. It just got to a point where just physically it bothered me a lot.
And I saw that as Gwyn never lets him be a part of the conversation. And so he had to insert himself to say that she's not allowed to make those decisions for them without talking about it. So her way of talking about it in that moment was just like, well, I give up. No. And saying it's going to be very short. And I think had she taken the time to actually have a conversation instead of just saying no, that it would have been a different interaction. But I think he's just so angry because he never gets to make a decision in their lives at all. He's always sat there waiting.
I understand that. I do. It gives me like a moment of pause or worry about, is that really what happens when he gets pushed to that point? Is that the kind of person that he really is?
I think he might have been expecting her to kind of come back a little bit, because usually maybe she's a bit more energetic in their fights.
Right.
And so if she had jumped up, he's no longer towering over her. And she, because of this episode, because of exactly what's going on, which is her trying to find another woman's child and can't do it, can't figure it out, that she has folded. She is overwhelmed. And he, I think he didn't even know how to handle that. Mm-hmm. And then just was like, fine, I'm going to go eat my sandwich over here or whatever.
Well, yeah. They must have ended that scene fuming, because the next time she comes home from work, he's got her blankets outside the door. I mean, what, they've been married for weeks now and she's already sleeping on the couch?
I think it's been longer than that.
I mean, maybe months, but still, it's very early days in the marriage.
Not a good sign either way. Well, I mean, it's not a good sign.
To the point, though, that he is done. If she's not even willing to have a conversation between the two of them, which it sort of seems like, it sounds like what you're taking is her caving as sort of agreeing to have the conversation, but she's not. She's still not willing to talk with him about it until the very end.
Yeah.
So there's an interesting premise to the science of this story that says that, and it's one of the only things that actually allows Tosh to have any moment in this entire episode, is the fact that she's the one that determines that there is a seesaw effect to rift activity. What they originally thought was aftershocks, but is potentially the idea of the rift claiming back things to balance. And it immediately brought me to mind Full Metal Alchemy and the Law of Equivalent Exchange. So, you have to take what you give. So I don't know, but we've never necessarily heard of this previously, or at least it hasn't been something that the rest of the team, sans Jack, has figured out.
And Owen. I mean, not Owen. Yanto.
Potentially Yanto. Yeah. Yanto's privy to this, but he's under Jack's thumb. Under other parts of Jack, too.
Seemed more to be next to.
Yeah.
In the kind of glimpse that we caught.
We'll get to that in a second. But this idea that it's now, in Jack's words, it's increasing. The frequency with which this idea of the leveling of what comes and goes is starting to, as Jack puts it, almost as if it's correcting itself. I think that's a really interesting concern to put in the viewers' heads, because it seems like they're building up towards something larger.
I was going to say, it's the 21st century. You have to be prepared.
And Torchwood is ready.
Torchwood is ready.
And at this stage in the series, Torchwood, we know they're not ready for anything.
They're ready to stand on top of buildings and look brooding in leather jackets.
They read a lot of Batman.
But as far as this idea...
Jack is Batman?
Jack is not nearly as prepared for anything.
No. If he were to have been Batman?
Batman has a plan for every contingency. Jack has, like, a shoestring, maybe some gum wadded up in his pocket.
Just keep dying and coming back until your enemy gets tired.
Exactly.
Aha, now you're out of bullets.
So this idea, though, this means that for this entire episode, I don't know whether you would you categorize the adversary in this particular story as being the rift itself or Jack, as far as hiding this from the rest of his team, with the exception of Yanto, who feels powerless to really do anything. He's sort of given in to whatever it is that Jack's burying.
I think the adversary is still the rift. I think. Or the antagonist is still the rift, and Jack is kind of a foil to Gwyn's story.
Unwilling but resigned to be that.
Right.
Like he does, you can tell they have that moment where they're sitting out looking over that beautiful bay. Gwyn has come out of the vaults and is sitting there, and Jack sits down next to her and says, "You know, it's there was just two of them, and now there are 17, and they're ramping up." And they have that whole conversation. She's pretty calm after what she's just witnessed.
I think she finally understands. And so that's her... Now she just has to process, but now she finally gets it. She's frantic before that because she knows she's being lied to. She can't figure it out. And I think that's the point at which she finally is like, all right, how do we solve it now? That's what she's used to. That's the position she is used to being in.
Interesting distinction that she understands but doesn't accept, because she still won't leave it alone.
Yeah.
Right. I gotta wonder, the staff, Helen and the rest of the caretaking staff that's down there for however long this has been now that this has been going on. Jack said something to the effect of like they were told that these were experiments gone wrong, that these people were experiments gone wrong, and they just kind of did they – and they know of Torchwood because that's apparently their access code. Anybody who can rattle off the name Torchwood and an access code gets in. That's cool. But do they – do you think they really know – like are they Torchwood staff? Are they – who are these?
I don't see why they wouldn't be Torchwood staff, because we know in the past Torchwood has been a larger organization than just the five people in the bunker. So why wouldn't they have like a medical division that specializes in care for these people?
Right.
True.
Or maybe are given just enough information to go on. It seems like that's always a kind of a nebulous, it's very... very blurry lines around the edge of Torchwood as far as what other positions of authority do or don't know about what it is they do. No one really gets the really dirty stuff, but they get that there are sort of covert ops, has to do with sometimes with the unexplained. What is it? Andy sort of like drops all these X-Files, spooky Mulder kind of references, which thank you, by the way. Thank you for putting X-Files references in that. Yeah, that's kudos to you. But that it has to do with with potentially things otherworldly. And that's about where it stops.
Yeah. Well, because in Torchwood's universe, everyone knows that aliens are real if they've been paying attention.
Unlike London, every Christmas. Forget about it.
Those mind wipes are amazing. Generous. Yeah, so I think that there would be room for a Torchwood medical, like Haley's saying, Torchwood medical or just adjacent. But they know who they work for, obviously. They know Jack. They don't know anything about Jack except that he's the boss and he's always there. Like, over however many years, and he always looks the same, just like everyone else. They kind of just take it for what it's worth.
Mm. Yeah, because they're very accepting of Gwen when she walks in. Like, she drops all these references. I'm here on orders from Jack Harkness things. And she walks in and goes, oh, looks around, can't process. And Helen turns around and says, oh, first time here.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what leads me to believe that Yanto's been there, but Yanto is much more follows what Jack says. So they probably went there together as a, let me show you what else you're going to have to manage. And these people are on payroll, so make sure they get
right. And Yanto probably didn't ask questions. He probably just
put in the food order once a week. And
right. Yeah, he's got to order the food to be delivered to the island.
Descales their coffee pots for them.
Well, yeah. Those people, yeah. I'm sure the caretakers need their coffee for sure in a job like that.
Thank you for the obvious segue so we can talk about a good game of Hunt the Weevil.
Yeah.
Well, it's actually been a while in Torchwood since we've had some in flagrante delicto going on screen there. From anyone. I think it was last was one of Owen's horrible attempts, which everybody looked away because it was Owen.
Yeah.
But yeah.
But we've seen Jack and Yanto grow closer and they danced together at the wedding.
Oh, they were closer.
Well, I mean, just, you know what I mean.
We just missed a round of naked hide and seek.
Jack well, and to teams. Your point, how do they go back to that after having that conversation with so Gwen?
That was my only takeaway from
Jack goes right back in. And he's stripped back down. He's like,
demands him back in. We've got work to do. Or there's a job to do. And
wank,
like,
wank.
Gotta go.
It's like, did you just say wank, wank?
Well, but
I meant wink,
kill.
Wink, but it works.
You know.
Gotta do what you gotta do.
The mood was lost.
Well, again, though, you don't know Jack. You've never been in there with him. So how – I just feel like he doesn't care.
I'm not at all surprised that Jack picks up where he left off. It's that Yanto's like, yep, sure thing, boss.
Yep. Jack's like, this thing works on command. Just so the last thing that I wanted to make note of, and this is just something that I know we tend to bash it a lot, but I think it's justified. And I will justify it again, is that I clocked it because on another rewatch, I was actually on the treadmill when I was watching it. So I had a clock right in front of me. We had 3 minutes of screen time for Owen, and he delivered 6 lines, of which a couple of them were only 3 words. And I felt like that was the perfect amount of Owen.
Yep.
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 Yeah. No argument.
And it wasn't even useful dialogue. Like, you could have completely cut him out because all he did was just
anybody say else could have said his lines and it would have been exactly absolutely the same. Yanto could have
but
said it.
But it was the whole team together, which I think for the story's worth, it needed to be all of them together and all of them saying, "Now we're with Jack. Leave it alone."
Yeah.
Good on you, Burn Gorman, for getting your paycheck that week. Well, so we'd love to be able to talk about the where these stories sit as far as sort of a on two perspectives. One, sort of seeing how they fit into the series of what we've seen to date. And now, as we mentioned, we're nearing the close. There's only two episodes left in the second season. So we've got a good number of episodes under our belt now, a couple dozen. But we also like to talk about whether or not a story is something that really is a quintessence of what Torchwood is all about. And I think, Haley, you kind of alluded to this at the intro. This kind of ticks all the boxes for what you would expect from Torchwood when it hits its maturity levels. You know, it's not testing the waters anymore. It's not doing the spitball of sci-fi ideas. They're working within what the universe of what they've already established. So, Haley, I'll give this to you first. Is this something where, I mean, as far as where would you put it in the ranking, so to speak, informally? And is this something that you consider to be for somebody who's watching doing a speed watch and saying, you know, well, just give me some of the salient episodes so I really get the storyline without having to worry too much about some of the hangups? Is this one that you would throw in the box?
Yeah. So not even remembering how many episodes we're at this point, I would rank it high. Gwyn is also my favorite character in the series, so anytime we have a Gwyn episode, it's going to be a big favorite of mine. And I think this one does work well if you're speed watching to just get like a taste of Torchwood. It's, you know, solid writing all the way through. And like I said at the beginning, it's a very Torchwood episode.
I also rank this one high. I think that you get a little bit of the science, a lot of the emotion. You get in this episode specifically a lot of the how does what's going on in the world of Torchwood impact the rest of the society. And especially in when we see the meeting that's hosted by Helen, the mom. Mm-hmm. And I think that is something that we don't always get a lot of if we're just in the hub and just following the characters around. But you have to know that there are people out there that are greatly affected by things that Torchwood is dealing with. And then on the last note, I also think that this is one of those episodes where you start to learn that we question Jack from the, is he making the right choice about how he treats his staff and the decisions about when these people come back? I don't think it's wrong that he's not letting them back into society. Like, screaming 26 hours out of the day is clearly not something you can go back into society and just exist, but is it the right choice to not at least just share with the mom like what has happened? Right. Maybe not the full story, but if it had been a controlled introduction, might it have been okay? I don't know. You know, those are the kinds of questions that I think good Torchwood stories and good science fiction can bring up and then let people have discussions about it.
That was my one bugaboo with the episode is I think Jack should have at least briefed Gwyn on the actual situation before he let her bring the mom in.
Agreed. My first reaction was, Gwen, you did not even ask anyone in that building. You did not do your research at all. And for someone who did all of that research to find these people and then just to...
That says a lot about both of them, though. The fact that Jack, we've said this numerous times, Jack is someone who's, you know, he's so far into the weeds at this point that a lot of times he and he's admitted to this, he fails to see the humanity at times because he's so concerned about taking care of all of the spinning plates, mm-hmm. that the humanity aspect is often lost. And he understands that that's a flaw, but it's one that he has to, it's almost as if it's something he had to give up the humanity in order to do the work that has to be done that requires you to just put that on a hook. And as far as Gwen's reaction and not, not doing due diligence on this sort of thing, is part and parcel of her because she is that blast of, but think of the people, mm-hmm. that yeah. is why she was brought on the team in the first place, knowing that she was going to be this devil's advocate, but yeah, and then the sort of the checks and balances between the two of them, yeah. I guess.
And I think Yanto plays a little bit of that in between them, obviously. Yeah. And I don't think Jack would have been mad at him for sharing with Gwen. I think the way he was like, oh, it was Xianto. Like, no anger in that. Just like, all right. But in other instances, if somebody goes against Jack, he gets mad and he lets them know right away that it's not okay what they've done. So I think while he wasn't going to do it, if it happened, like, all right, now you know. Right. But yeah, I think that there should have been more prep for that. Although, how would that have played for the screen? That's where you have to look at, like, would that have been a good ending for the TV show? No.
Yeah, and that's the part that you run into is there's a couple of these things where it's like, that made no sense, but it had to be that way because it's a TV show. So, you know, take your grain of salt and suck it up and enjoy the episode for what it was, which was freaking phenomenal. So, I mean, when I think, yeah, I remember going back to like, I can't wait till we get to season two. This is what I was thinking of.
Yeah,
is the caliber that I remember season two being, because this is the one that stuck in my head. You know, this is what I know the show is capable of. So that's what I was constantly waiting for.
I agree with you all. I think the points are absolutely valid. And I think the thing that kind of drives it all home for me, and I just double checked on it because something was sort of nagging at me as far as the thing that resonates with me most about this story is the emotional impact on the mother and the other families of the Lost.
Mm-hmm.
And what exactly would you do? You know, what would you do in that situation where you realize, you know, she's been so desperate? You know, look at what she's been doing for 7 months, going through crowd footage of football matches and concerts and things like that to try and find him. She sees this opportunity, and her initial reaction when she meets him is that that's not him. You know, and just watching her go through all that. I mean, she's a one-off character and everything, but Tracy, I think, the character's
Nikki.
Name, I think. I'm sorry?
Nikki,
sorry.
Nikki. Oh, I called her Helen. Sorry, Nikki.
Helen was the nurse.
Right. Wow.
Yeah.
Sorry, Helen and Nikki.
And Tracy, I don't know who you are. Stay out of my story. But she was the one that I was paying the most attention to, because it just immediately becomes one of those things where, you know, as a parent too, I mean, even in such an outlandish storyline like this, I start thinking to myself, you know, how long would you hold on to that? And what lengths would you go to? And you know, and what would you do? You know, what mountains would you try to move? And it was just the emotional depth of what was written into her reactions and Jonah's dialogue about, you know, where he found himself, you know, watching a solar system burn. It was beautiful, but the tragedy and the pathos and everything and the impact that it had on him, and just everything was written into that. I was just. It said to me, this is, just as you said, Jay, this is the kind of the bellwether by which I would expect Torchwood at its best to be. You know, and then, of course, it has the sexual elements and the danger elements and all the things that makes it Doctor Who After Dark, which is why we always like to ha-ha refer to the show. Now look at who wrote it. Chris Chibnall. Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Makes a lot of sense.
Yep.
So, yeah. Where we're headed, without tipping hand too much to where we're headed as far as, you know, how we close out this season and, you know, where it goes in the next and so on. I mean, that's
spoilers.
No, I'm saying without this is really good, a really good footing to be standing on at this point, especially after we've realized season two, where we're going, oh yeah, I can't wait till we get to season two. And here we are in the middle of it going, I don't remember this deadbeat episode. What's this all about? yeah, it recovers nicely. So speaking of this Torchwood show, you heard of this? Yeah.
What?
It seems familiar.
It also seems that some people want it back. But wait. I know what you're thinking. Ew. Torchwood US again? But no.
NARP?
No.
This was a hypothetical. It was floated by the Radio Times. And it was specifically done with regards to, you know, would you want to see this returned back to BBC Three? You know, if this became back into BBC Wales productions or back in Cardiff.
I have one caveat. I want to see Barrowman with his white hair play this role, because it puts him that one little step closer to being the face of Beau. Like, he did age. It just took thousands of years.
Yeah, they could just say he had a frighten.
He had a frighten.
Someone did him a frighten and his hair went white.
And now he needs to go have a munch.
Do him a munch. Yes. So apparently they put the survey out there. They just said, you know, how would you feel about bringing it back to Wales and doing it at this point? All right, I guess if you put your spoiler cone on for a second so I can just say this because it would be Jack and Gwen.
Yeah.
And we won't discuss the other characters. We'll just say, let's just hypothetically say it was just Jack and Gwen. Would you want it back?
Yes.
Yeah.
94% of those surveyed said yes.
Yes.
94% of people that responded to a poll about whether you want Torchwood back said they wanted Torchwood back.
Which means someone grab your calculatrice and tell me what 94% of 7,000 is.
A lot.
It's like 6,500?
Yeah, let's call it 6,500. So there's your viewing numbers.
I want to meet those 6% of people who are like, Tartan. They still follow it on all news channels, but don't want it back.
It's like, I still follow it enough that it came up in my news feed, but no.
And I felt compelled to respond.
With a, nah.
When
breaking
you
news, 6% of the internet is trolls.
The rest of the 26% must have been sleeping at the time. But when you throw a meatball question out
because
like
it was
that,
asked in the morning in the UK.
You lob a question like that out there, and you know that you're going to get your responses from the people that are like, "Where? How big is the yes button?" Bloop, and just smash that button. But the numbers are only it's fewer than 10,000, and I know the viewership for Radio Times, especially digitally, is much higher than that because they do other surveys about Doctor Who proper and things like and other properties, and their submission numbers are considerably higher. So Torchwood kind of it's nostalgia,
yeah.
But for those folks that still hold on to it, yeah, they're probably holding on to it because they would love to see it come back, especially if it's done not in California.
It needs to be done in Cardiff. Torchwood without Cardiff is not worth.
What if it was a cardboard Cardiff?
Jack, you got a little claymation Jack that just walks to the edge.
Ooh, I would kind of watch a little animated Torchwood with this little like Lego Batman cape flapping.
See, he is Batman. Confirmed.
He is Batman. Yes, this conversation took a turn earlier before we even started recording. All right. The other bit of news here is just to agitate Jay. And I think it kind of bothers Julie too, sorry, to a certain degree. What? Yeah, well, you groaned when I mentioned it earlier.
We were not going to discuss that. I was going to be positive.
We are positive because from a writing perspective, Mark Gatiss has indicated the door is open to him. He had actually received an email? Letter? Oh, my bad, email. Communication.
What is a letter?
Yeah.
It's like a text message, but slow.
It's an ersatz text message. Postcards. From Chris Chibnall saying, you know, the door is always open for you. And he's had ideas. He's actually, I think this was as a result of they were interviewing him because the new Target novelizations that are done in the old Target novel styles of Crimson Horror was recently published, and they were asking him about it, and he's, you know, super chuffed about the fact that it looks like the Target novelizations that fans of his our ages recognize from the from the 80s and 90s and things. So yeah, but he did actually indicate that it has to be a matter of the right idea. And he gets them occasionally. He's done like little short blips and installments and things like that. I think he actually wrote something for one of the lockdown extended stories that they do when they were doing the lockdown tweet-alongs.
We did like that.
Yeah. So the idea is still bubbling there. He is a super fan.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
No one ever going to take that away from him. He's like up there on a Chibnall and Tennant and Capaldi. And like if they were on a trivia team, they're strong.
They'd get third like place. Second place.
They did get second place. Yeah, they got beat out in a pub.
Did they really?
It was it was Moffat, Gatiss, and
Davies, I think. I thought it was Russell Davies.
It was one of the actors. I can't remember if it was Tennant or Capaldi.
I don't recall. But they got beat. They came in second place in a Doctor Who pub trivia.
And there is a picture that does it absolute justice.
They are just, they have collapsed on the table.
Oh, I will look this up. This is, it's worth it. News to me.
It's worth your Google. Yep, that's worth at least 5 Google cents right there. So, but yeah, so the opportunity is out there, and who knows? You know, maybe he will write for that. I mean, look at it this way. Alex Kingston also said
it was because Capaldi.
Her birthday, Alex Kingston's birthday was this past week. And she has indicated that she feels that it would be an absolute injustice if River did not meet the 13th Doctor.
I agree.
Also yes. agree.
Yeah. So Gatiss wrote within that frame. I mean, he was in the Moffat farm. So these are, all right. Well, it's the Moffat bullpen. Bullpen, is that better?
No, bullpens are not.
I pick your analogy.
Now I've got a song in my head. Old McMoffat had a farm.
Oh God. WHO. Yeah. But yeah. So he could write for River, you know, and have that be, you know, a character that he's kind of, you know, within his milieu.
Milieu.
Yeah. Cracking out the big dictionary today. I've had 2 Anyways. Glasses of wine. So yeah,
you should write for Doctor Who.
That would be laughable. I could write children's books. I'll write children's books.
Okay.
See how that goes.
Old McMoffat had a farm. I already got the idea for you.
Jacob can narrate.
I just got a potato. He had a potato.
Okay.
Lots of potatoes. Anyway.
Next week, we're going to be coming back with our classic rewatch, the first Fifth Doctor story of Castrovalva.
Yes. So we will finally get a fuller understanding of exactly what happens when Tegan, Nyssa, and Adric spend more than a couple of hours together, too. So that's fun.
I'm very much looking forward to it.
Yeah. Yeah. The Davison era is a lot of fun. And I'm really, really interested to get everybody's reactions to how it gets started. I mean, knowing what you've sort of gotten a feel for as far as the John Nathan Turner era and the way that he likes to run his sci-fi ship, but also the dynamic with this wholly new, almost entirely new TARDIS team. Listeners, please chime in on this too, because I know that we have a lot of folks out there who have been waiting for us to get to the Davison era.
Yes.
We have some guests who will be joining us for some of these rewatches as we get through, some familiar voices and some unfamiliar voices that will be coming out to join us for the conversation. So please share your thoughts too.
You want to bring strangers up in this cast?
Yep.
Okay.
All right. This has been episode 418 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jay saying I'm starting a new podcast. It's going to be 22 hours of straight screaming. Then I'm going to take a nap. Then another 22 hours of screaming. It's going to be great.
And this is Kier saying, if this does not teach you, never go off and get a cup of tea when someone asks you to. There you go.
This is Julie saying, bloody Torchwood, fob me off, why don't you?
And this is Haley saying, Kier's always telling me to talk more, so this is really his fault.
We'll see you next week.
And we'll see.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Want to keep the conversation going? You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube, or just send us a good old-fashioned email to feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com. You can also give us a phone call at 754-225-5477. That's 754-CALL-GPR, and you may hear your voice on a future episode of the show. Everything's got to end sometime, otherwise nothing would ever get started. Join us next week for a brand new episode.
Jacob Hansen. Gallifrey Public Radio is copyright 2021. We'll see you next week.